Welcome to the A World of Difference podcast. I'm Lori Adams Brown, and this is a podcast for those who are different and want to make a difference. Our guest on today's show is Dr. Grace G. Soon Kim. Dr. Kim received her PhD from the University of Toronto and is a professor of theology at Earl Hems School of Religion. She's the author or editor of 20 books. She's written Hope in Disarray, Keeping Hope Alive, Reimagining Spirit and Intersectional Theology, and a book that's coming out very soon that I'm very excited about called Invisible. Dr. Kim is a series editor for Palgrave Macmillan series, Asian Christianity in the Diaspora, and has served on the American Academy of Religion's Board of Directors. Dr. Kim writes for Baptist News Global, Sojourners, Faith and Leadership, and Wabash Center. She's published in Time, The Huffington Post, Christian Century, U.S. Catholic Magazine, and The Nation. She's also the host of Madang Podcast and is an ordained Presbyterian Church USA minister. You can check out more of her work, and the show notes will link to her WordPress site where she blogs. And we are just in for such wisdom, such scholarship, and such kindness. Dr. Kim is just an amazing woman and writer and leader. So welcome to today's show, Dr. Grace G. Soon Kim. Hello, Dr. Kim. Welcome to the A World of Difference podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Lori, for having me. This is so exciting. It's so great to meet you through this web and through Zoom. So thank you so much for the invitation. Such a pleasure to be here with you today.
Oh, the pleasure is all mine. I have read your work. You have written so much. And we have a mutual friend, Dr. Graham Hill in Sydney. So we're going to shout out to him.
I know. Yes. The world is small.
It is very small. I know a lot of my listeners already know who you are because you've written so widely, but some people may not know you yet. So give us a little introduction to who you are and what you do and what your background is.
Oh, that'll be wonderful. So I was born in Korea, and I know you're a missionary, so you've been all around the world and different parts of Asia. So I was born in Korea, and then when I was 5, our family immigrated to Canada. So I grew up in Canada from kindergarten all the way up to my PhD degree. And then once I finished my PhD, I came to the US in 2004, and I've been teaching since 2004 in several seminaries. So right now I'm a professor of theology at Earl Hems School of Religion. So I teach all the theology courses, sometimes ethics and sometimes interfaith dialogue courses. And next year I'll be taking students to Korea. We were gonna do this last year and then the pandemic happened. So hopefully we'll be able to go May next year. So I'm excited about that. I love to travel. And so I've been speaking in many places, and you yourself was at Graham Hill's house. And yeah. We were in Sydney, 2 years ago with my daughter. I was doing some stuff there. So I love to travel, and it's great to meet people from around the world. I think once you realize how small the world is, your perspective changes and how you do ministry and how you just look at God and the world. So it's a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you so much.
Oh, of course. No, I love your perspective. I love your perspective of, you know, even your journey that you write about sometimes and talk about of coming, I think you were 5, is that right? When you came from Korea to Canada and your family immigrated. Yeah. And I know a lot of people listening relate to that experience of immigration or even becoming an expat somewhere else, or your parents dragging you across the world in some cases like you had. And so I know that that perspective forms who you are, and it comes out so clearly in your work, but you have written a very special book that you're about to be releasing. I cannot wait to read. And it's called Invisible. Is that right? Would you like to talk about it with us today?
Yeah. So I can't wait for it to come out. I've been writing it for many, many years now. And believe it or not, you hear of people, their laptops crashing. I've heard students say it to me, and I thought, how in the world can something like that happen? It doesn't happen. And it did happen while I was in the middle of this book. Mm-hmm. You know, it was so heartbreaking and heart-wrenching. It wasn't in the middle. It was near the end of writing the book. So I lost all my files. It just, I was working early in the morning, and all of a sudden the laptop was shutting down, and all I had was this black square with a question mark. So I thought, maybe it's just shutting down, but it would not start again. So I lost everything. So it was dreadful. So I've been working on it for many, many years. And right now, you know, getting ready to have it released. It is a very, very personal book. I find out maybe some of my other books are personal too. So people say, oh, you write about your life story and your life experiences. And I've been doing that from all of my books. So, and more so as I write more. So this will be my 20th book. And, you know, much of my theology is informed by my own personal experiences of racism and sexism. So living as an immigrant, and trying to grow up. I grew up in a small city, London, Ontario, which is about 2 hours west of Toronto. So it's a very white city, a smaller city. And looking back, it was very traumatic kind of growing up with all the racism in the public school system. And then, you know, after immigration, we started going to church. First, me and my sister went, and then my parents joined. But once we started going to church, you know, you realize the sexism that exists in the church. So you've been a missionary in different parts of the world and in Asia, so you know how strong patriarchy is in Asia. So it's very strong, and parts of East Asia, because of Confucianism and the influence of Confucianism, you know, it really has a big stronghold in the church. And so it's been very difficult.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I really love so much about your writing is how you talk about the experience of being a woman, of being a Korean, Canadian, American woman, all the things, like the intersectionality of all of that is really beautiful, the way you describe it. So yeah, talk about some of those formative parts of you and what you're passionate about helping see change with the theology that you're writing about.
Yep. So this book, because it's so personal, I do write my experiences of racism and sexism. And that is all tied in with the immigrant experience of Asian North Americans. So I would include Canadians and Americans. And the fact that we are made invisible. So the title of the book is called Invisible. And we're made invisible in many ways. You know, Laura, you know, you live in the States. So when I first moved to the States, immigrated to the States, I realized there was a stark difference between racism in Canada and in the US, in the sense that in Canada, racism was people of all color were able to talk about racism, share their experiences of racism, and the white society understood that, you know, our experiences of racism was felt across all different ethnicities of people of color. Here in the U.S., because of the long history of slavery of Africans, the enslavement of Africans, a lot of the racism was talked about in black and white terms. And so if you're not black, so if you're Asian, then your experiences of racism gets pushed aside in the fact that, you know, Asian Americans are labeled honorific whites. So for some reason or some way, white people can kind of use us and say, oh, you're white in one instance, but then you're a person of color in another instance. So we're not fully white. We're kind of this honorific category. And then part of the result is then our experiences of racism get pushed aside. The other term is a model minority. You know, both of these terms emerged in the 1960s. By white sociologists, and it was really used to pit us against other people of color. For example, you know, white people would say to African Americans, if only you worked as hard as Asian Americans, you will be richer, you will excel and go to all the Ivy League schools. So that was a narrative that was used against us. And so when you have a myth like model minority myth, it kind of makes us invisible in the sense that our experiences of racism get pushed aside because the white society will keep saying your experiences were not racist. You know, you guys are the model minority. And so what the society does is it pits us Asian Americans against other people of color, against Black, against Hispanic, against Native Americans. So it does a disservice. So there has been so much problem in that way. And so the end result of all this, the racism and the sexism against Asian Americans, is it makes society itself and then the church itself makes us invisible. We're not that important, for one thing. Our experiences of discrimination and marginalization are pushed aside with myths like model minority myth and honorific whites. And so our identity gets made invisible. And so this is very, very difficult for a Christian woman, because as I do theology, and as you've read some of my other books, you know, much of our theology, my theology and much of my discourse, you know, I always say that theology comes from biography and biography comes from theology, in the sense that we come to know God through our personal experiences. So Laurie, as you were a missionary child and as you were a missionary and as you work in churches and different ministries, you encounter God through your experiences. And that's how we come to know God. We human beings, we come to God. And so I do write about that in my books. I talk about it in my theology classes, and I talk about it wherever I'm invited. And so, but when we are made invisible, then that becomes very, very problematic. So my book tries to address this and tries to work towards a theology of visibility, that we are all created in God's, we are all created by God. And in God's sight, we are all equal. Men and women, we are all equal. Black or white, Asian American, Latin American, African, Native American, we are all created in God's image. We are all important. So this theology of visibility that I want to kind of put forward is that we should all be made visible in God's sight. All our experiences of difficulty should be lifted up. We should want to help those who are marginalized. We want to help those who experience discrimination or racism. You know, that's exactly what Jesus did. When Jesus was doing ministry on earth, you know, he healed the lepers. You know, the lepers were the most kind of marginalized group of people at that time. People were afraid of catching the disease from them. So they were cast aside, pushed aside, they were marginalized. But Jesus reached out and healed them. The Samaritan, you know, the Jewish people didn't like Samaritans. But Jesus talked to the Samaritan woman, not a Samaritan man, but a Samaritan woman at the well, and engages in this lively conversation. You know, Jesus sets this example of reaching out to those who are discriminated against, those who are marginalized, those who are made invisible, and Jesus engages and lifts them up and heals them. And so, you know, that is part of what my book wants to do, that Asian American, particularly Asian American women who have been so marginalized, so made invisible, God lifts us up and says that we are worthy, that we are all created in God's eyes and created by God and are equal in God's eyes. And we need to do the same. So this is, you know, part of my mission in the book. And as I teach and as I preach and as I engage in other forms of ministry.
I love just all the ways you worded it, because, you know, I think about the Samaritan woman a lot. She's one of the most special stories I think we have. And I would just say any story where Jesus is interacting with women, they're very special. But there is something really beautiful about the Samaritan woman story, I think, because of the intersectionality of it all. It's not just the fact that she's a woman and she's being treated as property and it was scandalous to sit with her and talk to her. But also the racial aspect, she was a race that was, you know, people avoided her whole land, people avoided walking through. And so, yeah, I think there's no more beautiful example of someone being invisible, being made visible than that story. It's probably one of the best examples that we have. And I think the challenge is applying it to today. If we do say that we are people of faith and we want to be good people and we want to follow Jesus, who taught us to be good and live the best version of human life we possibly can, you know, who are the Samaritan women around us? And if there are Korean American women who are being seen as, and who are not being seen, and in worst case scenario, being killed and overlooked in the media, like in the Atlanta shootings, it is certainly our job to do as Jesus called us to do, which is to see and listen and, you know, raise their voices. So I would love to get your perspective on how you reacted when you saw what happened in the Atlanta shootings as a Korean American woman and how you related to all that.
Yeah, that experience on March 16, 2021 was very traumatic. You see, Asian Americans, the term actually, you know, when I migrated here to the States, all of a sudden I was considered a woman of color or a person of color. Up in Canada, we don't use that term. We use visible minority. So in the sense that we are visibly different and we're a minority group up in Canada, which is going to slowly change because the white population is shrinking. But it's interesting because there are different groups of marginalized people here in the States. Some are visible. You can see them walking down the street that they are marginalized. Others you can't. It can be marginalization through their gender identity or their sexuality. So that's not as visible. But Asian Americans, we are very visibly looking different. So in the sense that if I walk down the street, someone can see that I'm Asian American. And with all the Asian American hate, the Asian hate, the AAPI hate, we can be targeted. And so that was running through my head, that we are these walking targets. People can see us. So that's the whole irony about this. People can see that we're different physically, but in society wide, they want to make us invisible. And that goes back from, you know, from the beginning of our migration. For example, many Asian women were not allowed to migrate. The men were because white Americans needed cheap labor. So a lot of the Chinese workers, they came on the railroad and worked. They did all the dirty and the very difficult. A lot of them died. The white workers didn't do all the dangerous work. And then they worked in the farmland. And, you know, so they did all the labor work. They didn't need the woman, but the women that were brought, a lot of them were made into sex workers. Yeah. And so you see this in the history. So we have this long history. And so when March 16 happened, you know, that white young man knew what he was doing. He had visited those spas. He knows who works there. He had this anger towards Asian and Asian Americans. He knew exactly what he was doing. We are visible physically. And so he targeted us. And so, you know, 8 people died, 6 of Asian descent. It was horrifying. Right after that event, you know, I just started podcast in March too, called Madame Podcast. And my first guest was Diana Butler Bass. And so I think that was March 4th. And then March 16 happened. I had actually planned another guest at the end of March. But because March 16 happened, I quickly invited Dr. Russell Jung, who is co-founder of Stop AAPI Hate. And my podcast, I do, you know, YouTube, Facebook video, and then about 8 different podcast platforms. But if you watch the video, either on Facebook or YouTube, you can see the trauma on my face. March 16 happened. I think I interviewed in March 18 or 19. 3 days later, I was weeping during the podcast. I was trying to control myself. But even my face, visibly, I was so traumatized. I was traumatized for over a month because we are walking targets. It is so scary. You know, all throughout our immigrant history, you know, some smaller group immigrated in 1500s, but then the larger group started in the 1800s when white Americans needed cheap labor. So, but from the beginning of our migration, you know, one of the biggest lynching that happened in U.S. history was against the Chinese in L.A. when 18 to 20 Chinese were lynched for no reason. All of a sudden, they were lynched. You know, so there were a lot of killing already. There were a lot of targets. When we were in World War II, you know, no Germans were rounded up and put into internment camps, right, or any Polish or any other group, but the Japanese were targeted. They lost everything, their prop, whatever that they held, you know, they lost whatever they had, all their money, everything, and they were put in internment camps. So you see this over and over again. So what's happening during this pandemic is nothing new. It's just with the cell phone and social media, more people are aware of what's happening, and that, you know, we are being targeted verbally, physically, and we are being killed. And this has happened through much of our immigrant history. And so because it's not really told in our history in elementary school, even when I talk to colleagues, people don't know much of our Asian American history. People know about the enslavement of Africans. Some people will recognize the atrocity of the genocide, but the other in between, people just don't realize exactly what has happened. So even the history is erased. So, you know, so much of invisibility happens in so many different ways. So, you know, I'm trying to people understand what has happened in American history, and that we need to understand and know our American history so it's not repeated. When talking the majority Muslim heritage, Muslim identity. But people forgot that in 1882, Congress had put in the Chinese Exclusion Act, which banned Chinese from coming into the country. So no more Chinese can come in. So they were the first ethnic group that were banned. And that was supposed to last 10 years. They kept extending it till 1943. So all that time, Chinese couldn't come. The ones that were here, it was hard for them to leave, to visit and come back. They had to carry papers around, and white people can't differentiate East Asian. So what happened to Chinese got extended to Japanese and to Koreans. So, you know, when we're thinking about Voting Rights Act, we always think about African Americans. We forget that Asian Americans, we couldn't start voting until 1943, and that wasn't all. You know, it was slowly integrated. I think Indians were allowed to vote in 1946. I think Japanese soon after, and then Koreans, and then everybody else was allowed to vote. So we weren't allowed to vote for until very recent American history. So that's all tied in with the invisibility.
Yes. And I just thank you so much for walking us through all of that. You know, it's one of those things. I live in the Bay Area and I have friends whose, you know, grandparents had been on a farm working Japanese immigrants, you know, brought in, like you said, to work the fields. And then one day they were taken and put into an internment camp for years and then just released one day with absolutely nothing to just fend for themselves and start all over again when the farm was completely gone and everything. And it's a part of history we don't really talk about a lot until you know people and then they tell you the oral history is a lot of how it works. But it is a shame that that's so invisible, that we don't talk about it more, because as you said, we don't want to repeat it. And look what we're doing. We're still dealing in 2021 with things that should have been resolved a long time ago. So thank you for just giving us a synopsis of it. And I do hope everybody listening goes and reads more of your writing and also buys your book. But I have one question in my series I'm asking everyone, which is, who are some change makers that you admire that have inspired you, that maybe you read or you follow in some way that we could be inspired by too?
I think there's been many people that have inspired me. I think theologically speaking, I think Jürgen Moltmann has inspired me. He has spoken and he has written so much in the spirit. And so much of my work, the last many books are actually, majority of my books are on the spirit. So he has changed me, and that has changed my perspective on how we do interfaith dialogue and how we engage with people who are so different from us. You know, I think we get so afraid of strangers and foreigners, and I talk about all that in my book, Invisible. But we need to understand that we're all created by God. So Yuga Moltmann has inspired me. I think Reverend Jesse Jackson has inspired and motivated me to kind of work for more social justice. He said to me one time, he says, "You've written enough books so you can now do more action." I laughed about it. We have engaged in some social justice work here in North America and also in Korea. So he has inspired me. So there's been many people. I think Mother Teresa has inspired me too. When I was in seminary, I belonged to the Presbyterian Church in Canada, and they picked two students one summer to go overseas. And I was one of them. And I went to India. My friend went to Nigeria. So I spent the summer in India, and the plan wasn't really to go to Calcutta, but I ended up going. I never met her, but I visited Missionaries of Charity, and it was a very difficult thing for me to visit and see, and I know I wrote about it in one of my books. I think it's the Homebrewed Christianity Guide to the Holy Spirit or Reimagining Spirit. Because, you know, it's one thing. Oh, I know, I wrote it in Embracing the Other. It's one thing to see sick people, and it's another thing to be actually doing something about the sick people, like bathing them and feeding them. And for me, I was a young seminary student. I think I was 23 years old. And at that point, I was so scared to do anything at the Missionaries of Charity. So I just kind of stood there and did nothing all day long. And I saw so many volunteers feeding and clothing and bathing them and just being with them. And I couldn't, because all I kept thinking about was, I'm going to catch a disease. I know many of them were lepers, and I thought I might catch something. So this fear of the other, well, as so many people like Mother Teresa, doesn't have that fear, and she reaches out and loves the poorest of the poor, and was able to do so much good, not just in India, but around the world. So she has inspired me a lot. And, you know, that moment, that day at her complex, you know, I still ponder about, and I wish I did things differently. So, yeah, there's many others, but those are the key ones that have kind of inspired me to work for change. And in turn, I hope I inspire others to work for change and to treat people equally and lovingly and to embrace people who are so different from you.
Well, you actually do inspire so many. You've inspired me, and I know many others who've read your writings. And so we have been, I guess, second generation inspired by those who've inspired you. But thank you for all your writing. Yeah, I love your book with Dr. Graham Hill, Healing Our Broken Humanity. You address a lot of these things in there as well. And I think you're going on your third printing. Did I see that? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. It already went into third printing. So we're very excited. We hope it'll go into fourth printing now.
Yeah, it's great. So this new book, Invisible, I cannot wait for it to come out. And so everyone go sign up and pre-order her book, Invisible, which is coming out in the fall. But thank you so much for speaking with us today. Where can people find you? Where are you writing?
Yeah. So, and I'm excited that this is my first interview for Invisible. So thank you so much. I hope to do many more so you could help advertise.
Yeah.
I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and everything is Grace G. Sun Kim. So Facebook is Grace G. Sun Kim. All my Madang stuff is posted there, all my videos. And my podcast is Madang Podcast. So you can subscribe and listen. And so your listeners can listen, and my listeners can listen to yours too. So I think it's all good. Yeah, yeah, we help each other out. So thank you.
That's
so
great.
Please follow me on different platforms. And I also have a Madang Instagram. So it's Madang podcast Instagram and Madame podcast Twitter too, but not on Facebook, because then that's too many Facebook, because I already have a public Facebook for Grace Jisun Kim. And also I have a website, gracejisunkim.wordpress.com. So please look for me there. And Invisible, you can pre-order in many bookstores online right now.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us today, for sharing your wisdom. We look forward to reading more of your writing. I'm sure you're not going to stop at 20 books. You seem like you have another 20 in you. So bless you.
Thank you so much. Thank
you're
you.
You're welcome, Dr. Kim. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Please go out and find her book, Invisible, which is releasing soon. We will put links to it in the show notes and all of the other 20 books she has written. She has a great one that I really love with my friend Dr. Graham Hill in Australia, and it's called Healing Our Broken Humanity, another great one. She's written a book with her daughter, which is also amazing, and I've heard her talk about it on a podcast before as well, just the process of that. And yeah, just she has a wealth of information out there that she's written and helps us to think deeply, coming from two cultures and blending this third culture together, but also speaking into the theology of that around intersectionality and different, just her voice is so important. I've learned so much from her, and I know that you, if you haven't heard of her until today, that you will definitely want to read more of what she's written and go check out her podcast too, the Madang podcast. Well, here at the World of Difference podcast, we have a very exciting announcement coming up soon about a partnership that we're starting with an amazing organization. And I'm not going to say all the details yet, but just look for that on our Instagram and our Facebook page. And you'll be getting those details very, very soon. We're excited to make this announcement to you. Also, in the meantime, if you have other guests that you'd like to hear on the show, if you know someone who's writing a book, doing amazing work around the world, being a change maker in various ways, whether it's something people really know a lot about or somebody who's just very, you know, quietly doing their thing and making huge changes. We here at the World of Difference podcast want to learn from everyone who's doing great work that could inspire us and give us tools and handles on how to make a difference better together collaboratively. And so, yeah, let me know. Reach out on Instagram or Facebook if you have people you'd like to have on the show. And in the meantime, I know there's just so much happening in our world. California is in the middle of a new election. We will know the results as soon as this podcast is dropped. There's a lot of new situations going around with just the Delta variant and new variants coming out. There's hurricanes hitting Texas, Hurricane Nicholas. There's various situations around the world that we're paying attention to. And so if there's a way that we could, you know, say a prayer for you, also reach out on Instagram or Facebook, and we'd love to just pray for you, or just to be aware of what's going on and see if there's a way we could help. If you're interested in doing more with Afghan refugees, especially here in the California area where we're receiving quite a few of them, you can reach out and I can point you to some great resources of some great work that we've been volunteering with to help welcome people who've just been through so much. And wherever you are, just go love your neighbor, just show kindness to someone near you. We need more and more of that wherever we are in our little corner of the globe. And thank you for making a difference wherever you are. Talk to everyone next week. Bye.